Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Good evening, everybody. And I hope everyone is having a great Wednesday. So, we are A Taste of Ink Live, and our guest today is author Susie Smith. And before we get to our interview and introducing Susie Smith, we just want to thank our sponsor, which happens to be the Radisson Blue Hotel in Athlone, Ireland. Yes, in Athlone, Ireland, because we are having a writer's retreat in Ireland 2024 in June. And if you'd like more information on that writer's retreat, and this is not a retreat where we're going to go and teach writers how to write. This is going to be a really great relaxing retreat for writers, new writers, and mature writers. Our facilitator will be the United States Poet Laureate, North Carolina's Poet Laureate Jackie Shelton Green. So come on, this is going to be a magical journey that will last you a lifetime. If you'd like to know any more information about that, you can go to www.vertical, and that's vertical with the K, alliance.com, and you're going to click the link that says Vertical Creative Ventures. And now, let's talk about our interview today. What would you do if society crumbled? How would you survive if you had to fend for yourself? This is a couple of questions that we're going to talk to dystopian author Susie Smith. We're going to explore these questions in her gripping series, book series, Asylum. And her newest one that came out, part of this series, was Ascendant. This is the second book in the Asylum series, came out in August, I believe. And so we're interviewing Susie. She lives in a small Oklahoma town, and she weaves authenticity into her writing. So let's bring on and introduce Susie Smith, author Susie Smith. This is going to be a great interview, guys. I'm so glad you're going to be here. Hi, Susie. How are you?
Fine. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So, we're almost residents here, and you're in Oklahoma. I used to live in Oklahoma, and now we're broadcasting today from Texas. We're not too far from you. But, but reading your books and reading up about you is just really a really interesting read. And so I'm looking forward to talk to you. It's like, how do you write a dystopian novel in Oklahoma?
Well, You know, I tell everybody, I did not set out to write dystopian fiction. I never saw myself as a sci-fi writer. I really wanted to be a romance writer. The romance, the human aspect of people is what I'm really interested in. The backstory, the dystopian part, really came after 9/11. I got to that just really kind of shook everybody up and kind of just rearranged my worldview and just kind of my mind, just my imagination, just kind of took off like a rocket. And that's really where that came from.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, so growing up, did you grow up in Oklahoma?
I did.
Ah, so what was your favorite subject in school?
My favorite subject was English. I'm not a math person. I have four kids, and my youngest daughter is a math wizard, and I do not understand her at all. so it was English hands down, yeah.
Okay, and who was your favorite writer and why?
In high school, as a child, or as an adult?
As a child. And has it changed as an adult?
Well, I really was impacted by two authors growing up. One of them was Madeline L'Engle. She wrote A Wrinkle in Time. Go figure. You know, that's science fiction, isn't it? I loved her book. And just devoured them. I really loved that kind of stuff. I also on the opposite side, I liked Lucy Maud Montgomery. I just love the way she writes. She's just a fantastic author. And so, you know, between those two, I really really influenced me actually wanting to write. Thinking, you know, maybe I could do that, you know.
Okay, that sounds really good. So, in writing the Asylum series, and it's kind of interesting. I always talk to different authors, and I'm an author as well. I like to talk to different authors and see how did they get to the point of writing a series, or how did they know this was going to be a series. So. Starting out with Asylum, how did you know that Asylum would bring you into your next book, Ascendant?
I didn't at first. I really, the whole series thing, that's a big commitment. And, you know, that Asylum being my first novel, I was just gritting my teeth and trying to get through writing that one. I don't know about everybody else, but that first novel, that first one, the second one, Ascendant, was 100 times easier for me than Asylum was. So I think I was learning how to write when I was writing Asylum. And so it really didn't occur to me until I had published Asylum and gotten the feedback of people going, well, what happens next? You know, so I was like, okay, well, we'll take this a little bit further and see what we can do with it.
So. Yeah, I could see that. I've seen some really good stories, and I've read some, and I can understand how you get to the end, and you're like, okay, there just has to be a second part of this. You know, it's not not clear. It's not clear when you finish reading, it's not clear if you're watching a series on TV or something, but. Definitely there are some things that make you say, okay, I really would like to know what happened to that character. So, and when it comes to character, how do you develop characters?
I don't, you know, everybody says, you know, do a character board, you know, that kind of thing. The characters are in my head. And I really don't have a system for it. I just they have their own quirks. They have, you know, they just, as I write them, they just kind of come to life. I don't know how else to explain it, really. I do keep track of basic things like eye color and hair color and, you know, stuff like that, because you don't want to make a mistake of saying somebody had brown eyes and then, you know, 20 chapters later say they had blue eyes. You know, that kind of, that's not ever
right.
A good thing. Never a good thing to do.
Right. So what was some of the challenges that you had in, you know, in character development? What were some of the challenges? Or, you know, like some authors will say, well, you know, I had this challenge, but then the character pretty much just, you know, helped me with this particular scene or you know, circumstance.
Yeah. I think my secondary characters, I'm always worried about my secondary characters because I see them in my mind, but I don't feel like I have enough. I might not have enough room or time in the book, as far as the timeline of the book goes, to develop
mm-hmm.
them.
Okay.
And that's a challenge for me because I need those secondary characters, especially when you're dealing with a found family and you have all these different people in play. I just don't think I give enough airtime to some of them, which Ascendant, a couple of characters, a little bit more, you know, breathing room, room to grow, and I really
mm-hmm.
enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The third one, I'm writing the sequel to Ascendant, and I'm developing some other characters as well.
Okay.
So I really feel like I just wish I had more, you know, room. You know, they
mm-hmm.
they restrict you to that 80,000 word count, and sometimes it is kind of hard
right.
to get everything to say in there.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true. Or either it's hard to, you know, you're when you're thinking that, oh, these are all such great, you know, parts in the book, so what do I have to cut out? That's another hard one. That's a dilemma, and you're like, oh, my goodness, which is the one I'm going to cut out or which is the one I'm going to keep in and just develop a little bit more. So I get that part. So how
yeah.
does your dystopian world compare to, like, The Hunger Games and Divergent?
My dystopian world and Divergent, they're – the landscape's, you know, very, very similar. Everything is bleak. Everything is, you know, the world as you know it, you know, has been destroyed, is abandoned, you know, that kind of thing. And a new
mm-hmm.
system is trying to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is that way on The Hunger Games, too. I just don't, and my characters are not fantastical. I guess I don't know if that's a word or not, but...
mm-hmm.
They don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's not anything wildly fantastic about my characters. My characters are down-to-earth, everyday people
mm-hmm.
dealing
right.
with things that are just extraordinary. So I think
and
that's
I really
how...
like that, too. Mm-hmm. I think I like that, too, because of the fact that It makes the book more, I think, and makes it more realistic, even if it is a dystopian world and, you know, sometime in the future, that it just seems like it's just more natural. You know, like you said, it's like it's different than having this larger-than-life character rather than this person you can really believe. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they live somewhere out in nature or something and all this stuff has happened and, you know, how are they surviving and things like that. So I think that's a little bit more realistic. So I have a note
right.
on here that says that you found inspiration in The Walking Dead. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, I love The Walking Dead and my kids Like I said, I have four kids, and of course, The Walking Dead was on, you know, every single time that it came on every week. My girls just loved Daryl Dixon, talked about him, all, you know. So I kind of got sucked in to watching it and just was utterly amazed at just the scenes and the way that they depicted their landscape. And I really got a good visual of what I wanted my backdrop to look like. Yeah, without the no zombies, no zombies, but you know, just that, just that bleak, you know, cars on the side of the road, you know, siphoning for gas. How am I gonna? How am I gonna get point A to point B? You know, that kind of a thing.
That's interesting. I didn't watch Walking Dead when it was on, when everyone was watching it and it first came out, because I was like, eh, I really don't like zombies that much. But then I did, then I sat and watched it, and I was kind of like, okay, this is a great story. It really kept you interested in it, you know, even with all the zombies and all the different character development was really very good. So I was like, this is really good, but I was not. Now I joke about it. Now I joke about some things in there, and in fact, that my daughter lived in Atlanta, and I said, you know, The Walking Dead starts in Atlanta. So anyway, just but it was really a great show. I got caught up into it when I started watching it as well, and I was like, and you're right when you're saying you see all the cars on the road and stuff. That is more realistic, not including the zombies, but that is more realistic of how things would look in a situation like that. So, yes, most definitely, I get that. So I have a note here, too, that says things are dark in your world, and let's talk about you leaning into the dark side.
I was writing this morning going, oh, here I go again. and you know, for a second I just kind of was taken aback, like how easy it was just coming out, you know. It was just kind of, you know, I'm like, where in the world did that come from? I think I watched too much crime TV or something. I don't know, but I do. I'm really interested in human relationships and human dynamics. And, you know, something that occurred to me while you were talking with The Walking Dead, you know, the zombies are just a backdrop. You don't have to really like zombies, because the story is more about and how the character drives that story. And that is really what I try to do. I really like character-driven stories. So that's really what I try to focus on.
And that makes for a good read, I think. I think when it's character driven, because when you're thinking of, because I love dystopian novels. I love anything that has to do with the future or make you think about things. And so I like the fact of, you know, how do people relate in a situation like that? Will people get better? Will people get meaner? I mean, that whole, you know, thing, that's kind of, you know, what I like as well. So, and so when you're reading a dystopian novel or you're seeing things that are in the near future, you know, I think for me, that's more my thought. How do people relate at that time?
Right.
You know?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, great adversity either brings out the best in a person or the worst in a person, and sometimes it brings out both. Sometimes you see both. So it's just pressure. What kind of pressure you put on a character to see how they're going to react in a certain situation. My character, my main character in Ascendant, had to kill someone, And I feel mm-hmm. like that is something she never in her previous life would have ever considered doing. I mean, she was mm-hmm. a good girl. She's still a good girl. Mm-hmm. She's still a good mm-hmm. girl. It didn't change who she was. She has to deal with, the backlash of that. But I think she just grows as a person. So I think the dark side of my writing, I use to bring out, I want to see, you know, what the character will do under pressure,
mm-hmm.
What they do under the darkest of circumstances, and how they, you know, how are they going to react? Are they going to, are they going to go completely under? Are they going to be sucked in into a dark hole, or are they going to find themselves mm-hmm. out? You know, that kind of thing.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on people being prepared for changes in society if this kind of scenario comes out, like in your, you know, that's the world in your book?
Well, one of the questions that I asked myself was if something happened, which, I mean, you know, that's a big if, but it is there. I mean, the
mm-hmm.
you know, it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Would my kids know how to do something as simple as planting a garden and
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
growing things and hunting things and being able to live a life of subsistence without all the creature comforts that we have,
mm-hmm.
electricity, the internet, Google, which is one of my favorite things in the wide world, is Google. I use mm-hmm. it all the time. But, you know, that knowledge at your fingertips. But what if that mm-hmm. was all gone? You know, how would a person survive, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are the questions that I at least want if my reader to walk away and say, do I know how to, you know, especially, you know, if you don't live, you know, in the country and don't have access to large amounts of land, how would you adapt? How would you adapt? How would you grow things or do things? So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean.
That's very true. I love watching how people nowadays, I mean, and I think this is kind of a precursor when you're talking about the future of how prepared society is. I like to watch the ones where people leave the city or they buy a piece of land and they just do do it yourself, build my home or build, you know, some place for me to live or learn how. There's a man that I watch on TikTok, and he's always showing you, if you're in the wilderness, how to do stuff, you know, how to make a battery, how to make your fire, how to be more effective. And I think those are really great. Now, growing up in the country and living in Oklahoma, and I dated a guy who lived in Stringtown, which is really way out in the country,
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma. And so we used to go out to the woods all the time, and I learned how to do a lot of things there. My mom and them lived down in Okmulgee is where they lived, and
sure,
I learned how to grow stuff, you know, when I lived down there. So I learned how to plant and I learned how to grow stuff. So it is interesting when I see people that move from the city and just go out into open space and open country, how they learn to do things and watching them do that. So, but I don't know if everyone can do that, because I know some people that are like, yeah, you're not going to make it. I'm just saying, it's like, first of all, you're not going to make it because you have to have a hot shower. So that's going to be your first clue, you know, right there.
Right.
So now I also read that you are a curriculum specialist for the Kansa tribe. And I find that interesting because when I lived in Oklahoma, I did a lot of history with the five civilized tribes because we did a lot of our family genealogy, and I was always amazed at the as much as I read about Oklahoma history, there's so much that I don't think you get outside of Oklahoma. But there's such a rich history in Oklahoma, even with the tribes and other things. So tell me a little bit about that, being a curriculum specialist. How did you start? How did you become the curriculum specialist?
I am Paw and Osage. My family, mm-hmm. my mother, Paw and Osage, and I live in Kay County. And I had gotten my degree, my English degree later in, you know, later in life. I was, you know, in my mid-40s, and I decided I wanted to do something different with, you know, with my career as far as my career choices go. And it just kind of fell in my lap. They had an opening, and I went in and interviewed, and my boss is the most, she's wonderful. She is actually my mother, her neighbor growing up, and so she's a millennial. My boss is actually a mm-hmm. millennial, but she is the last mm-hmm. fluent, she's the most fluent speaker in our tribe that we have. And
wow.
Her grandmother, when she was little, would make her get off the bus with her brother and go down, and there was a man, his name was Dud, and he studied under Dr. Rankin, I believe, from KU, who specialized in the call language. And so mm-hmm. Every day after school, she'd get off that bus and go learn language and then come home. Mm. And she grew up with that. And so she knew me whenever she interviewed me, and she hired me, and it just kind of morphed from there. We make a good team. Right now it's just three people in our department. So, we've had a lot of challenges. We've faced a lot of challenges, but, a lot of our focus goes towards our youth, because our young mm-hmm. people have got learn our language, because our language mm-hmm. is our identity. That's where our identity comes from, and mm-hmm. and culture goes right along with that. The language and the culture. And you mm-hmm. know, if we can get our young people to carry it, then it won't die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a big focus.
What are some of the things about the tribe that many people don't realize? I know that because, you know, hearing you talk about language, and I say that when my aunt started teaching us about our family history and the culture and whatnot, for me, it just made me more interested in learning more. And so there's so much more that we learned. What are some of the facts about the tribe that many of us don't realize?
Well, one fact that shockingly most people don't know, Kansas gets its name from our tribe, the Kaw tribe.
Okay.
The state All of right. Kansas is after our tribe because most uh-huh. of our original land was in Kansas until we were removed. And let's see, what else? Topeka? Topeka, Kansas?
Mm-hmm.
These are fun facts that I are fun. Topeka mm-hmm. is a call word that means a good place to dig potatoes. And I don't think anybody knows.
Right.
We're a small tribe. We have about 3,500 members enrolled mm-hmm. right now, but mm-hmm. we have no full blood left.
Okay.
when we walked from, or when our ancestors walked from Council Grove, Kansas to Kay County, Oklahoma, it took them 17 days, and it was in the winter. And when they started, their numbers were already decimated to about 400. When they got here, it was down to 200. So
oh, wow.
The tribe has really is really resilient. The people are, are so resilient and tough and spirited, and you know, they're just wonderful, wonderful people. So those are a few fun facts.
So working with the tribe and working with the young people, how do the young people relate to learning about their culture and learning about the language? I know that for us, it made us just even more prouder to find out some facts that we didn't know. So how does it make the younger people feel? Because, you know, we're wanting our younger people to, you know their culture and know their language and know more about their history, so the history and the legacy doesn't die.
Right.
So do you get a lot of the youth being glad to hear it and maybe carry on some traditions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they it gives them a sense of self. If you don't know who you are, if you don't know where you come from, you know, hard time with that. If you don't, you know, adopted people, I know from experience because my husband's adopted. And if you don't know who you are, where you come from, it leaves a hole. It's just difficult to live your life that way. So when we give them the language and the culture, it does really boost them and give them strength, and they take it into the school. And I, some of them have actually, I really hate to say that, but some of them actually have received, gotten a little pushback from their teachers when they speak in Kaw. So that is a challenge that they face when they go in their schools. But yeah, they're they for the most part are very, very receptive and just come back week after week after week.
Right. Well, I know that you know, it's interesting you say some of them getting, you know, pushback, and I think we experience that in some kind of way. All of us experience something in that. I know when by the time I got to college and was doing writing, and I had a creative writer teacher that just really wanted me to major in English, and I'm like, I had such a bad experience with English teachers, and mainly because I was such a creative person, I wrote creatively. And it was interesting when I got older, a lot of English teachers said that it wasn't that they didn't want kids to be creative, but they had such little time to teach you what, you know, the curriculum, what they wanted to teach you, that they just didn't spend a lot of time with creativity and a lot of students. But that's gotten better. It's gotten better with time, which is pretty good. So hopefully it will get better in time with our student, our children being able to represent themselves, you know,
correct.
And be more of a positive thing. Yeah, most definitely. So
I'm learning a lot about it.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Great, because, you know, I was, you know, reading about you and, you know, and talking to you, it just gives me a sense that you're such a just well-rounded in so many areas, which must give you a lot of inspiration as well when you're writing your stories. So, which I think is really cool. So one of the things that I like to ask writers are, you know, when they're writing, it doesn't matter if they wrote one book or two books, is, you know, what advice would you give to up and coming writers, and, you know, from what you've learned as a writer?
I know how difficult it is to get through that very first one.
Mm-hmm.
So my my advice to writers who have not published before is to just keep going. Get that done. Get it finished. You'll have such a sense of accomplishment. The accomplishment of actually finishing a novel. And, you know, and you're sitting there and going, well, what do I do with it now? You know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
That is an overwhelmingly wonderful feeling. And it just inspires you to write more. And I think it's kind of like a snowball effect. If you get that one, just get that one going. Just get that one under your belt. It'll come easier. It does get easier. That's my advice. Keep going. Do not give up. You will regret it.
What is your writing?
Especially if you're if you're someone like me who is just plagued. If you haven't written that day, or you know, if it's gone a little, you know, and you're not writing, you get kind of depressed over it. Just encourage people just to keep going. It's very rewarding.
Just to keep going. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, what did you feel was success when you finished your first novel? Because I know success does not the same to everyone. So what was success for you? Was it just that you finished it, or that you had a really, you know, for yourself, you thought it was a really good story? What was success to you?
Yeah, it was actually finishing it and following through. You know, actually following through to the very end and seeing it in print. That was, you know, that success for me. Of course, now I'm kind of muddling my way through the whole marketing thing, which is a whole different can of worms. as far as the writing process, getting it done, that to me that was okay. I've accomplished something. I have, you know,
right.
And it just spurs you on.
Right, right. So. Well, I'm going to tell you, Susie, it's been really great talking to you. Talking to a fellow Oklahoman, it's been really good talking to you. And where can people find you? Where can fans find you?
You can go to my website, susysmith.com, SUSY Smith.com. I am currently revamping my Facebook page, so I'm not on Facebook right now. I'm on Instagram, Susie Smith 205, I believe. You can find me there. But sign up on my website. I would love to hear from people who want to read or have read or just have questions, or I just love to talk to people.
Question
or whatever.
All right. So one thing that we do here at Living Vertical Radio is that we do get a copy of Susie's book. And if you'd like a copy, just drop me an email and I will either send you the book or meet you somewhere and give you the book. So you can have a copy of it and read this book, Ascendant. And Susie, thank you for being a guest. And I'm looking to have you on here when you do your next book. So just, consider yourself family.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. So definitely we will be having this broadcast with Susie Smith. It will be also on our radio. You'll be able to hear it for Saturday, and our next Wednesday, you'll be able to hear it again. If you missed it, we'll be broadcasting it on our social media. And so I hope you're listening and you hear more Susie Smith, and I hope you go out and get her book, Ascendant, which is now available. Thanks again, Susie, and you take care.
Thank you so much. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, our readers, thank you for our fellow listeners and our fellow readers. We appreciate you.
Thank you to
our
faithful
listeners.
This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, Ceestine Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.